Welcome back to You're Not My Father, the only Alaskan podcast dedicated to providing fatherly insights, wisdom, real life stories, and the occasional joke or two or three or four. I'm your host, Thomas Greenman, and today's guest is no stranger to our show. Back for round two is the father, the fearless father with $1 million smiler, Tyler Young. Welcome back, Tyler.
Hey, Thomas. I'm glad to be back.
Hey, I am so thankful that you're back on the show for a second round. In the first one, you interviewed me, which was really new, but I really find you fascinating. You're just a really positive guy. You've had a lot of life experiences and challenges. You're a successful entrepreneur. There's so much wisdom that we can get from you, and you're young. You know, you've literally, it's your last name. I mean,
yeah,
but you've still got a long career ahead of you. You're a father, you know, you're co-owner, you run a successful company. There's all kinds of things out there. So for those of you that are listening to the show, maybe we talked about in the last podcast with Tyler, but I met him back in Puerto Rico in January, and just a very honest, genuine guy. We just had this spontaneous conversation. It was wild. But Tyler, one of the things that you talked about with me was your brother and your mother, some challenges that you guys kind of went through in the beginning that really kind of changed and framed up your life in a lot of ways and probably a lot of your mentality and headspace. So I would love if you talk to our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's so fitting because it is Mother's Day today, right? So happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there and any of them who choose to listen to this podcast, if you happen to be, happy Mother's Day. And if you forgot to tell your mother happy Mother's Day on Mother's Day, it was May 12th. If you're listening, write it down for next year.
Set a Google reminder for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So going into your question, I had a crazy, amazing mother growing up. She took on the world. She had three boys. Me and my younger brother are only 16 months apart. She had my older brother diagnosed with leukemia at 23 months while she was pregnant with me. Crazy, fascinating story. She went to get her tubes tied, came home pregnant.
Now, so you're the miracle baby.
Now that's my younger brother.
Oh, your younger brother. Okay. Yeah, he's the miracle.
That was like, hey, we got a child with leukemia. We got another child. I think it's time we, you know, close the door on that. And she went all the way down to the clinic and came home and told my dad, hey, so we're not doing that. We already got one on the way. And that's Bubba. He works at Tonic and Mercy as well. So
nice. That's cool, man.
Yeah. So I was blessed to have a little brother to run through everything with while our older brother and my mom was just helping navigate what it was to battle leukemia in the 80s.
Yeah, that's. You know, just kind of stepping into your mother's shoes for a moment. Wow. You know, just your family, your dad and your mother, but especially your mother, you know, mothers are, you know, they're the ones that are providing that comfort and succor to their kids. And it's like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I know, right. I've asked some, but my parents don't get into all the details. Like, you know, she worked at John Deere when they found out. And she had to leave her job, obviously, to focus in on Ryan's health. And my dad had to step up, work a lot more. And it was a long journey that they had to battle leukemia. And it was, as a parent now, I have so much appreciation for my mom and dad to look at my two-year-old at the time and think, oh, wow, imagine being told right now they have cancer. And then imagine being told, you know, take your son home. He's enjoy the time that you have left with him. These are things that my parents went through. And I just breaks my heart to see what they went through, yet so proud of how they overcame it and how they raised us. And, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but Ryan is 40. So I think we were blessed to have
absolutely
a winning fight. And so many are not. but a lot of that was the energy and positivity and the effort. You know, my mom, it's Mother's Day. So she won some awards. She got a Mother of the Year award. She was involved with our schooling. You know, she got on the board there at the school. She was involved in everything, honestly, as far as back as I can remember, where mom had three boys running around. I can't tell you how many times we had three boys over and there's six of us while dad's gone on a hunting trip and my mom's the only one there. Man, my best story, my mom was at my brother's 18th birthday party, maybe 19th. And yeah, you know, we were able to drink at home. And so we had a keg, and I would have never saw this, but my mom did a cake stand. My mom did a cake stand with about 20 boys, just her and a bunch of teenage boys. And we convinced her and we held her up. I got that seared in my head. I said, damn, my mom is cool.
That's pretty awesome. So tell me more about her personality. I mean, for her to, you know, since she dropped her career and then focus in on her family, she certainly doesn't seem like she's the shy type. She sounds like she's like really, you know, she knows what she needs to do and she just goes after. She's a charger. I mean, am I right or what do you think?
Yeah, she became that, right? When you have no choice, when you know, the doctors give you information that is not what you find acceptable. And there's a lot of people out there in that situation today. You have to find your own path. And I think she was really wired from that, though, growing up. She was a bit of a brawler. She had two sisters and a younger brother, like by 13 years. And she was a fighter. She was feisty. You know, we got a little Native American blood in us.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandpa, I think, was 50%, my mom's dad, and something like that. And my mom, you know, she got a temper. She got a little bit of a temper in her. And she knows how to fight for what she believes in. She's not afraid to speak up when it doesn't make sense, which quite frankly can be really annoying. I think a lot of us can relate to our mothers asking a lot of questions. I just want to understand what's, you know, I just want to understand. And my mom's really good at that. So over the years, I've learned that she really does just want to understand. And she's full of questions because there are few people in life that want the best interests for you. And those people go the extra mile to look out for you. And sometimes it can feel like you just want them to back off, that you got it. But you got to, eventually I realized it's just her love, that she wants to be involved in everything that we're doing. She wants to understand it. And that's because she truly cares. And there are few people that care about us as much as a mother can.
It's absolutely true. I tell my kids a lot, you know, it's like, if I didn't care about you, I wouldn't get on to you. I just let you be, you know, to really, I mean, I'm not going to say in every case, you know, if somebody's getting on to you that they really love you. Cause we know that's not always the case.
Did you say somebody's coming on to you?
Get on to, you know, somebody's fussing at you.
Yeah.
No. But yeah, you know, kind of going back to what your mother, you know, she's kind of fighting, you know, it sounded like, you know, she got an answer that she didn't want to accept about your brother's diagnosis. And so what did she do? She went and found out other information, went to somebody else. She wasn't going to take no for an answer.
Yeah, absolutely. They sent him home, I think, on two occasions. I mean, he did full radiation, chemotherapy rounds, I think, three times. He was cured at one point and he relapsed. You know, all at a toddler's age. And ultimately, they found a blood transfusion as an experimental treatment. And we moved up to Seattle, Fred Hutchinson's. Ryan is deemed and awarded a miracle survivor by Fred Hutchinson's. And at the time, they had no idea if it would work or not. And it's a bit of a heart-wrenching story. I've only recently heard it from my dad in the last year, just how that transplant went down. But both my younger brother and I matched Ryan, two out of the three, what we needed. And since I was a little older, I was chosen to be the bone marrow transplant and donor, I should say. And, you know, my mom told me that story. That was just heart-wrenching. You know, obviously, I don't remember it because it was a traumatic experience. But as she explained it, you know, you got to hurt one son to save another, possibly. And those needles, I still have the scars, minimal scars today from them because they're pretty big. But she described it. You know, I didn't want to do it, so I don't try and take a whole lot of credit. because I was hiding and they had to gas me and my mom had to hold me and they, you know, fight to put the gas on, knock you out. I mean, I was three. So ultimately it worked, and which was really cool. I realized Ryan and I were twins for a minute because, you know, when you get a bone marrow transplant, it actually changes your blood entirely. So I think
really?
He had chickenpox. Yeah. He had chickenpox twice because in that moment we were identical. All of the, you know, I'm not a doctor, but as I understand and has been explained to me, we were identical at that time. And then he started to, you know, fight his own viruses. But for that moment, we were the same. And that's why he got chickenpox twice.
Well, that's probably a small price to pay for saving your brother's life.
Again, I was three, but it's, you know, been something I went through, and it's something that has been talked about as I was growing up. So I have no doubt it's played a strong influence on me as a person. But I, you know, don't like to try and claim any value like it would be today. If I had the opportunity to donate my bone marrow to save a life today with full choice, you know, credit to everyone out there who's done that. I actually met Ashley from RSPA. He's the only second person I've ever met that's donated bone marrow.
Really?
Yeah.
It's beautiful, man. So out of your brothers, you know, not to pick favorites, but do you feel like you're closer to your older brother just because of kind of what you went through?
When you're 16 months apart, you're so close, right?
Yeah.
My younger brother, Bob, and I were tied at the hip. His best friends were my best friends and vice versa. And we always hung out, always. So I couldn't say I was closer with Ryan because of the connection, but I think Bob and I were closer because while Ryan was in the hospital, we played together. While Ryan was in surgery, we played together. You know, while mom was at the hospital, she dragged us along. She literally told us, she made us go everywhere with her. She wasn't going to let us out of her sight. And it had a lot of impact on Bob and I. So I remember being asked to stop playing baseball because it was just too much on them at the time, and never played baseball again. You know, after being asked not to do that, I think it was in fourth or fifth grade. Not that I minded, because I was about to move up to the, you know, fast pitch. I remember something like that. I remember being like, yeah, that's fine, Mom. I don't need that ball coming right at me. But
that's interesting. So you were asked not to do it? You weren't told. You were asked.
Yeah, I was asked. I mean, I don't remember being told. I remember being asked. You know, I remember, you know, strong communication saying, hey, now's not really a good time to do it. I don't think my parents ruled by demand. They communicated and explained most of the time. My dad was he had an iron fist when he needed it.
So speaking of your dad, I don't know if I know too much about your dad. I know a little bit, but why don't you share with me and with our viewers a little bit more about your dad, like maybe what he was going through during that time period and where you guys are at now.
I mean, that's going to take at least three podcasts. So I'll try and explain it the best I can with a little bit of time. You know, my dad is my hero. My dad is my best friend, but he wasn't always. Mm-hmm. And he is today. My dad is an example of what it is to be a man, a father, a husband. And he did it through very challenging times. He had to deed his house back to the bank. He was a fireman at the time that Ryan was diagnosed. 24 on, 48 off. You know, he started doing rentals. He started a nursery. He built a log home. He's a mechanic, an electrician. He's the plumber. He dropped the trees. Incredible with the chainsaw. He was a welder. There's some crazy art that he welded when he was younger, 19, 20. He's just incredibly capable. He was just polar bear hunting in negative 40 degree weather up in northern Canada. He's getting his Super 29. That's the last animal. You know, familiar with that because you're in Alaska. Less than 200 people in the world have accomplished that feat.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's a big hunter. And above all, he taught me that life is more about the experiences that we have than it is any of our possessions.
Do you ever feel intimidated by... It sounds like your dad is just, he's done so much. Do you ever feel intimidated by you know, not to say that your accomplishments are nothing to sneeze at or laugh about. I mean, like, you're incredibly accomplished for your age. You know, I keep saying it like you're some kid. I know you're not some kid, but I mean, you've accomplished a lot. I mean, you're incredibly successful, but you know, do you ever draw the comparison between yourself and your dad and think like, oh man, I'm just scratching the surface compared to him? Or do you really see, you know, him and you as like, this is him and this is me, and my stuff is just as valuable as what his is. It's just, you know, what does your mind think about something like that?
I remember being like 17 or 16 and doing this program called Body for Life. And
Bill Phillips, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I did do it. I did the book and took the pictures, wrote it all down, got a weight set in the shop that my dad welded when he was a kid. It's still there today. I used it when I was in Oregon, and it's pretty cool. But I was on him. Like, come on, let's get fit. Like, Body for Life, man. You're out of shape. You're fat. You know? And he's not, because he hunted so much. He was 6'6", like 190. He's a bean pole. But I'm like, let's get strong. Come on. And he laughed at me, you know? And then I got strong and was benching a lot. Close to 400, I think. It was max. But I was really into weights in my early 20s, and he smiled all the time. And then I started making money. And I started making real money. My dad is one of those people I could tell everything. He never was jealous. He never talked down to me. He only lifted me up. And at one point, I made more money than him in a year. And nice. He smiled. And I'm competitive. I'm chasing my dad, right? I said, how can you just be so happy about it? He said, you'll understand one day. And I called him up when I had Ryler at some point in the last 8 years. And I told him, I get it now. Like, I get it. And even my success of what I'm doing, which is different than my dad's, he just is my biggest cheerleader. So is my mom. But I talk to my dad a lot more at this point. And while he's accomplished, he doesn't stop. So all the time I tell him, you're just constantly setting an example for me to pursue. You know, now he's starting a outdoorsman show in Nevada, Reno. So all of them moved down. And my dad's been in the space. He had a hunting television show. And he's like, no, there should be one here. He doesn't need to do this. You know, he doesn't need to do it all. But he's like, no, there should be one. You know, he's going to, I don't know, he's doing 15 trade shows a year, give or take. He's 9 days in Pennsylvania standing at 65 years old. Crushing it. I mean, he just doesn't stop with his innovation, his projects. We have a log home. And maybe you can put a picture up, because it's gorgeous that he built himself. He just took a class at Mount Hood, one-day class, learned how to build log homes, Lincoln logs, chop them down, cut the grooves. And he ended up building the home. Then he went on to build log homes for a while for Mark Fritz, who put the class on. And that's where all the animals are. It's incredible. But it's tile roof, 50 years, and it's steep. He's up there pressure washing. Okay. Steep. He's got ladders, three ladders. There's just ladders are stacked up on this thing so he can even walk. It's so steep. He pressure washes. He does this thing three times. Pressure. This is this year. Pressure washes it. Okay. Then he paints it. Then he sealed it. And I'm like, Dad, I don't even want to go up there. Like, I don't want you standing up there. I don't want to go up there. He's 65 years old.
And he's out there doing it by himself?
All by himself. I mean, he did an addition to his shop because he needed room for another vehicle. He just does it. You know, he did an addition. He's built things without design. It's blown my buddy's mind who does this. Without design, adds 900 square feet, you know, brings logs into logs. It was just, you know, he had some frustrating days. I saw him, you know, getting kind of mad. But without even figuring it out in advance, it's just pour and go, let's build. It's pretty humbling is all he makes me feel, Thomas. And that's today's podcast about fathers. Like, what can a father be in our life? And my dad, as I said, wasn't when I was young, because he was gone a lot. He was gone in, you know, our teenage years, 6 months out of the year. He'd be gone for 30 days, back for one, gone for 30. And he was hunting the world, creating stories. And he's a master storyteller. And I remember getting frustrated. I had a fight with him one time. I said, you can't tell me what to do. You're not here. Mm-hmm. Right? But there were moments where I was frustrated. He wasn't around. But he was around when he needed to be. He was around when it was important. And as I became a man, he never not picks up the phone. He listens when we speak to him. He tries to help us in our situation without telling us what to do. You've talked to me, Thomas, and I love talking to people, right? You said our first experience, shit came out that you were like, whoa. And it, you know, my dad is a lot to that of how he treated us. And I'm doing a run-on sentence. I hope you all are following along. But ultimately, the relationship is cultivated into one where I love him deeply. And he always challenges me constantly just by his own actions as I watch him into his later years just not stop. To the point when he would walk from the shop to the house, because he built a whole shop that he made in the home, and then he built the log home and he converted the other one to a shop. If we saw him walking, me, Bob, and Ryan, we jumped up. So many times after school, I've been laying on the floor, we'd be watching TV, we see dad's coming, boom, we're up, we're vacuuming, we're doing the dishes, we're washing the, okay, dad left, lay back down. You know, that was the kind of influence he had on us. Like, boys, you stay busy.
My kids are like that. Sometimes it makes me mad, but I wouldn't say mad. It's just like I want you to have that self-determination to do it yourself without like my presence being required kind of thing. But they're kids. I mean, I get it, but same way with my dad. It's like, oh, okay, mom's here just by herself. We're cool. Dad's here. It's like, oh man, we're polishing the brass and, you know, cleaning the windows and stuff like that.
Yeah. And just because the kids need the reminder, right? Everyone needs to hear things 7 times. That's what a lot of us know. Kids need it. They need the example. They need to be pushed for it. And, you know, now I don't stop. I'm doing everything and anything. My life, I'm tackling it all. And these are lessons of how much we learn when we're a kid and what we see. And later in life, we can choose to say, that's how I want to be. And
so speaking of that, so transitioning from a boy into the man that you would become, tell me about like the challenges that you faced that really helped define you. So after your brother has, you know, more or less recovered, you're trying to be successful. You're learning these life lessons. You're in high school, college, whatever, you know, that type of time frame. Like what's something that's been thrown in your path that makes you stumble that you learn from that makes you even more determined to push into the future that you became?
It didn't quite work the way you hoped it did there. Ryan's battle didn't stop in high school.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of kept creeping up. He did defeat cancer, but when you go through that much chemotherapy, blood transfusions, and then we had the scare of HIV.
Okay.
And he had over 100 blood transfusions. So I remember being 15, I think it was 15 years old, that parents had to sit us down and say, okay, this is a problem. This, we don't know. They did not test in the 80s. And there's a chance that Ryan has it and that maybe we do. And so not too long after that, his eye started being pushed out at dinner. And I remember sitting at dinner. I can see it right now. I know where Ryan sits at the table. I know where I'll sit. And I can't remember if it was mom or dad. Someone leaned over and said, huh. I think it was my mom's. Dad, Rick, look at his eye. It's getting pushed out. So then we had a brain tumor that we had to go through.
Oh, man.
We had to remove the brain tumor. And the first surgery was unsuccessful. It started growing back. And then they cut his whole forehead out. It's got a metal forehead. And I can remember being at surgery, giant ass round table, playing Army Men, because we didn't have phones back then. So me and Bub had thousands of little green guys set up the biggest war ever of little green guys and tanks and set it up and, you know, watched Ryan get wheeled off. So a physical battle never stopped. You know, it was a his life defined the rest of ours. And I'm so grateful for it, because what he did showcase, just like my dad, is a fucking fighter. His body would not give up. He would not give in. And so while we watched other kids that we met and other families face a different end, we saw him. And I credit a lot of my continued optimism and hope that I have every day, because I watched Ryan. I never really feared he wasn't going to come out of that surgery, ever. And he gave me that feeling. My parents gave me that feeling. So the biggest defining, I mean, you asked what was defining a challenge. I constantly saw low odds of survival. You know, doctors saying this isn't good, and someone who just didn't care. And, you know, I can't imagine what he felt as a kid. He grew up in it, and he was 23 months. He didn't know different, other than he sees me and me and Bub have a different life. That bothers him at time, because he was a big kid. He was going to be 6'8". He was, you know, the doctors nailed us. Me and Bub are 6 foot. They said that's where we'd land. 5'11 and a half or three quarters on a good day. Bub made sure to measure me. So 6 foot. But, you know, so Ryan had a lot of development he had to do. And so that carried into high school, you know, getting picked on, bullied. It's one of the things, Thomas, I gravitate towards those that struggle, right? Those with challenges, because they need more help. And Ryan did, and people would pick on him. And, you know, so I had to see that. I had to navigate that. I mean, I remember being a freshman, though. I didn't put up with that. I was the big kid. I was the same height that I am now, freshman year. And so he was a senior. And there were times where I had words with people, right? Yeah. Polite words. You know, it was helping explain so people understood. You can't just take a book by the cover. Like, let's understand what you should praise this man, praise this boy, Ryan, for what he's done, not challenge him for any of his struggles. And so I learned to kind of voice a lot of that early. And I found it to be really successful, that as people understood, the more they knew, the more caring they were, the more protective they were. And that's kind of all led to now. I'm a very transparent, open book. And I'm unpacking that really for the first time as we say it now, that I was doing that in middle school. I was doing that in high school. And the root of it was Ryan.
So, I mean, your brother played a huge pivotal role in your years. And not to sound like he still doesn't play a pivotal role in your life, but are there times like in maybe that time period where, not necessarily that you felt isolated, but you felt like you were struggling with issues that like were Tyler issues. Like I can't really talk to my dad, or I can't really talk to somebody else. You know, I just feel like I need to work through these things on my own. Did you ever run into those types of like imposter syndrome type of times, like where maybe you thought like, maybe I'm just not good enough to do this or whatever, even, you know, I can tell you from like my own personal experience, like there's plenty of times where I felt like maybe I wasn't cut out to do this or something. And, you know, a lot of times I just end up praying or maybe I just kind of did some kind of soul searching kind of thing, you know, in some kind of hippie kind of sounding way or whatever. But I usually felt like I kind of came out on the other end of the spectrum. You know, like I came out at the other end of the tunnel having learned something about myself. Did you ever run into any of that type of stuff, or did you just have such a close, tight knit family that, you know, it just never really happened for you? Like,
depends on what age, right? Like, as you describe that, I've faced that a lot more as an adult than I did as a child and a teenager. But as an adult, yeah, absolutely. Had many challenges in life where some are just not appropriate to go through with others, because you got to figure it out for yourself between you and God. If you believe in God, which for a long time I didn't, right? I thought I did, but I was not committed with my heart, right?
Yeah.
And when I was young, family made a difference. Having two brothers, a mom and a dad, involved, caring, sharing, home environment I love to be at, home environment our friends love to be at, within our circle and greater circle, no, I had a lot of confidence. I had a lot of safety.
Yeah.
And that's how important being a father and a mother are. Being there, even when you don't know it. You know, my dad gave killer advice to Gary that rings true to me today, which is kind of why I sat here. It's a perfect time to say it. Like, you know, my backyard, I moved to Georgia and I invested in all that out there because I had 5 acres, 20 acres neighbor, it was all trees. My dad put an above ground swimming pool in our teenage years. We had the trampoline, we had airsoft guns, we had blow darts, we had bows and arrows, we had paintball guns.
I got in trouble with some blow darts.
Yeah. My dad busted his across the leg. I mean, I shot Bub or Bub shot me. Damn it, I think Bub shot me. But right, like in the eye right here.
Oh my God.
And so he like snapped him right there. He's like, that's going to take an eye out. And then he snapped our bow and arrow in half because we must have been 9 and we thought we could dodge arrows. So we would stand in front of the targets and shoot each other. And Bub got me. That's where I was like, dang, I think Bub got me again. He got me right in the stomach, you know? And my dad came out and busted the bows. What are you boys doing?
Well, you know, supervision is important.
You need to supervise your boys. If you've got a couple boys close in age, they're going to get in trouble.
Is this one of those stories that you're going to hold in reserve with your kids until they get older because you don't want them to start acting it out? Well, Dad said it was okay. I mean,
oh no, I'm going to tell them what we did and how it was inappropriate, dangerous it was. Yeah. You know, that's going to teach early that that's not okay. And Dad was a silly little kid. Do you want to be a silly little kid? No, you don't. You know, you want to be a little better than that. So, yeah, this is fun talking about history.
So, I know that this may be kind of a sensitive subject, but
hold on. I want to go back and answer that.
Go ahead.
Well, I did have a lot of support. I did have a lot of fear and insecurities. You know, for me, it was athletics and sports. I'm an athletic person, but I didn't ever dedicate enough time to it. I didn't have a coach. I didn't have someone who dedicated time into me. And I definitely felt like an imposter. I could make the team, but I'd panic when I'd be out on the field. I was the best practice player there was. And then under the limelight, I fear would, you know, felt like it was, I lost all my talent, just like in Space Jam. Somebody took it away as soon as I walked out onto the court. And I can be athletic, but that was the extent of it. There's a lot of fear of failure and things that I wasn't certain I was going to be great at. And I had that young age. And to work through it, I redirected into things I thought I'd be better at. And we naturally do that. We gravitate towards what's easier. And I spent a lot of time gravitating towards what came easy to me. It's only been as an adult, you know, get comfortable with the uncomfortable, embrace fear, you know, feel the fear, do it anyways. That's what I've been saying for a couple of years to my team. And I've been living that. I've been doing that, as you know.
Yeah.
And now I've conquered that. It's an amazing feeling to have no fear. I have nerves, which is different. Fear can stop you in your tracks. And I've learned to overcome the fear. I can feel the nerves, but I know I'm going to push forward.
Right.
As a kid, I did not know that. I did not have that. I don't think a lot of kids do. And that's where just the other day, my son was talking about another boy and his behavior. Without getting into the details of that behavior, I explained to him this. I said, that boy is a child. He was scared. He was upset. You're getting upset and you're attacking him back because that's your feelings. And I talked to him and I expect more from him. It was the first time I really spoke to him that way. It's like, I expect more from you. We talk about these things. And when you see someone, a boy, child upset, if you match and mirror that upsetness, you're only going to lead to more conflict and frustration for yourself. It's like, calm down. You don't have to be upset. These conversations I am starting to have more regularly with both of my children.
Yeah, me too. I've got a 14-year-old and a 9-year-old, and I think my daughter, because she's not really outgoing, I feel like she draws some of that aggression in some ways. I mean, she's a second degree black belt. She can take care of herself. But it seems like she draws it, where my son is more, he's more aggressive. He's very outgoing. I think sometimes he makes that drama on his own in some ways.
Still
with my daughter, it's more of like I understand versus my son, where it's like, do you understand this? You can't do that.
Patience is important with our boys. My dad showed a lot of that in the areas that he needed to. We were not perfect and we made a lot of mistakes. I can recall a lot of them where dad was frustrated. And I was not as responsible as I am now, right? So children are going to be children no matter how much we treat them like adults.
So are your parents still married today?
They are.
That's beautiful, man. I feel like nowadays marriage, I feel like in older people, older generations, you know, I think people really understood what marriage was about, where nowadays it's questionable. I think some people get married maybe for the right reasons. And then there's plenty of people who get married for the wrong reasons. I'm on my second marriage myself. I feel like my first one, I had no business being married in a lot of ways. And so for you, you've got kids. You're not still married right now?
I had the children out of wedlock.
Okay.
And so we separated in 2020. And that was, you know, we talk about those challenges in life to get through. I did get married for 3 months when I was like 22 to high school sweetheart of 7 years. That lasted 3 whole months. Not for the reasons you'd think. Marriage wasn't it. There was a lot of discovered information after the fact that led to the end of the relationship. But those are troubling times, you know, heartbreak, heartache. I think, are the areas we can grow the most. Betrayal is the key word, because betrayal can come from a best friend. It can come from a friend. It can come from a coworker, an employee, a parent, a family. Betrayal can come from
It can even come from yourself.
Yeah, it can. It comes from everywhere. The emotional response to that betrayal hurts, at least for me, more than I've experienced anything else. And my relationship in 2020, you know, ended rough as well. But we worked through a lot of that together and cohabitated for 3 years and 9 months, because our kids were 2 and 3. And kids come first.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like marriage is like, I don't know if it's that important, but I feel like kids are really the ultimate relationship, you know, that ultimate commitment, you know, where marriage theoretically should be just about the same, if not better. But I feel like where you have a marriage can come and go, and you don't really have to have any ties to them. But once you have kids, you know, you're connected to them essentially forever. You know, your bloodline is tied to them, you know, forever, essentially. And it's a challenge, you know. We've talked about it on the show, and me and Tyler have talked about it, but I have a son who I've never met. And that's got its own set of challenges. But just even with the kids I do have in my house, it makes it sound like I have so many kids, but even just the kids I have in my house, it can be a challenge. But you know, really having my wife is amazing, you know. And maybe it's the whole possessive thing is a little cliche. I'm her husband, she's my wife, whatever. But I feel like it's this really great partnership. You know, it's the more I know about business, the more I'm involved in business, I feel like your wife, your spouse is like your personal business, you know, partner, you know, like this person's with you through thick and thin, you know, shares in the profit and loss, you know, all that other good stuff. Like where, what are you looking for now? Now we're trying to set you up, Tyler. Now we're, there's some woman listening to this show and we're like, we got to make Tyler not single anymore. Like, but what are you looking for in a woman? Like, what do you think gels for you? Like, what do you feel like is that thing like that, that you need?
I wish I want to address the comment.
You got to put the hair up now.
It's getting hot in here. I'm starting to think about that. First, I want to address that when you do have kids, it's a commitment that hopefully most of us connect with. Not all fathers do. And that's kind of the point of the podcast.
Yeah.
But what's the beautiful thing about marriage is it is a choice. It's a choice you make every single day to honor the commitment that you made. Whereas with children, if you're connected to your child, you don't have a choice. You're going to put them first for a lot of adults, not all, and the majority. But with marriage, it's even more beautiful because you get to choose your wife and your wife you, and you have to put a lot more effort into maintaining that. I think that's why God says, you know, your relationship comes before your children, because it does. Yep. And it should. It should come, in my opinion. And I ultimately have chosen to be single this whole time without dating because I'm not ready to put anyone above my children. And for a while, somebody had told me.
That's beautiful, man. I really appreciate that. I do.
Yeah. Well, I've watched a lot of people go through separations, and I just kind of found that I didn't want to mask the pain. First of all, coming out of my only marriage, which I could have done an annulment, but, you know, I decided to take off to Texas and just party for a whole year, Thomas. I just was a hard worker. I had a lot of money. I had bought a house. I owned my own business, and I went through a lot of pain, and I said, hey, I'm going to go visit my buddy in Iraq. I mean, sorry, he returned from Iraq. He was over in Iraq and he was DMing me back when we used that on AOL, I think, or MySpace. And
he said, hey, MySpace, cringe.
Yeah, and he took my FK down to Texas. I drove to Texas and stayed for a year and driving back and, you know, flying back, getting my car. And I just partied. I mean, I partied. It's the truth. We, those boys coming back from overseas, they want to party. So I kind of fell into their approach on life. And I was normally not for that. You know, I wasn't a guy into any drugs or any of that stuff. And we didn't get into any drugs. I did have some white Flexerol or Tremadol, right? They were painkillers. I tried that for a little bit because that's a common thing in the military. Yeah. And it was, we had this challenge. They said, we're going to do our whole leave. We're going to get drunk the whole leave, 60 days. And we did. And we did. And then they all went back to work. And I said, I'm going for 90.
Wow.
And so I went 90 days straight, but I was just focusing on myself. I worked out 3 times a day, ate 8 meals a day. I was 6%, 8% body fat on those handheld things. Who knows if they're accurate? 205 pounds. I'd go to the hot tub in the morning and I'd stretch. I'd go home. You know, Danny went to work, my best friend to this day, I live with him. And then I'd go do a traditional lifting exercise around noon. And then he'd get off work and we'd jog to the gym 2 miles. And then we'd do a CrossFit workout. And then we'd go out and get drunk. And I'd get up at 6 a.m. hungover, but not really, because you get used to it. And I have a really strong liver. I mean, I'm really, you know, high tolerance still to this day because
you're planking with your liver.
I do a lot of health stuff now because I didn't really drink before that at all. I just kind of dove in, right? I was going to have fun. It was a challenge. So ultimately, I didn't want to go through that again. I had kids this time around. Going through just a separation was very hurtful. It's not what you imagined. It's not what you wanted. It's not what you wanted for your kids. And I said, I can't do that. So I focused on my mental health to just get right. And part of that is knowing that if I wasn't ready. I think I may be closer to ready now, 4 years later. more than 4 years now, 4.5. But so the next question, what am I looking for? And what I'm looking for is someone that lifts my spirits, that you have a partner in your life that makes you feel you can be more than you are, that has a way of challenging you that doesn't drag you down. Because often to be pushed, it does require a shove. But yeah, that shove can be gentle or it can be hard. And I think if you find the right partner, they can have gentle pushes. And it doesn't even need, it could be a just a, it's a rub of the back rather than a push at all. And when you have that person behind you, I'm going to put it this way. I have this vision of like a writing a song about this. And I talked to a few people about it, so it's cool. I'll get this recorded out there and see what people respond. I want you to imagine with me, you know, close your eyes. And if you're in a position to do it, and
I'm not driving, so I can close my eyes.
All right. You have a family, you have a wife, you have kids, and you're in the kitchen, standing in front of the stove, and you are essentially grilling some chicken. You're flipping it, and your lovely wife comes up behind you, slips her arms around your waist, and wraps them up and kind of grabs your chest and sinks her head into your back, because most of us are taller or equal height.
Yeah.
And the feeling that you have is comfort, is safe, supported. And most of us probably kind of lean back, take a little deep breath and suck in that love while you're cooking and she's just loving on you in the family home. It's a very vulnerable feeling, right?
It is, but it's, I mean, I can accurately picture that. I don't know if my wife has done that exact thing. Like usually I'm cooking chicken on a grill, but
our scenario is you're barbecuing outside, or you're working on changing the oil, or you're fixing something. It's that moment that she walks up behind you and wraps in behind you when you're not expecting it. Yeah. And your reaction is, right? But a lot of relationships lose that. I know mine did. And
really?
You know, I felt, you know, in my relationship was, okay, all right, let me just get through this. And when you're in a relationship with someone that you just don't feel supported with, I have found that that is a very vulnerable, I believe it is a very vulnerable hug for a man. And how many times is, you know, even if someone comes up and tries to grab your arm, Thomas, you have a woman grab your arm, like, come here, hook in, I'm going to walk with you. It's uncomfortable. You don't want to do it. You want to do it with your mom. You want to do it with someone you care about. You want to do it with an aunt. But you do it with someone who's not in that bubble. You're like, no. And now you imagine how many people are you going to let walk up behind you and snuggle their head into your back and wrap around you. There's not many that I would let do that.
Well, yeah, and I would automatically assume that it's either one of my kids or my wife. It's funny you say that because I was working the media booth at church today. And so I'm having to go through the slides. I'm keeping in track with the band. And my family gets to church late. And Conan comes behind me and grabs me while I'm doing this. And I mess up one of my slides. And I was just like, oh, thanks, buddy. But I'm like, crap, I messed that up. But yeah, if it was some stranger, it would have freaked me out.
It startles you. Yeah, that's a place where it's a very vulnerable place, I feel like, for me. And I've talked to some other men and they've agreed and you're nodding your head. And I would like to be in a relationship where you never lose that feeling and you always want it. And because you feel safe.
Yeah.
The person makes you feel safe. And in a fractured relationship, and I've talked to a lot of men about this because I have this vision of this movie and a song around it I think a lot of us could relate to. And it's a wonderful feeling when you have someone that stands behind you. There's so much a bigger picture to when a woman stands behind you and you feel safe and you feel supported and they wrap in okay, you feel strong, right? You're at the grill, yeah. Like, hell yeah, I'm grilling this. Like, this is going to be the best chicken ever, you know? Oh, I feel so supportive, you know? I just got energy. Whatever task I'm working on, I just got empowered by my woman coming up and showing me that love, not face to face, because she has my back. But at the same time, in a relationship with someone where you go feel that when you get that hug, go to therapy.
Right.
Because you should have that.
Yeah. I feel like I could piggyback on to that. Like, one of the things that I forget which part of the Bible it is, but it's something about a woman of valor who can find her value is worth more than gold and jewels or something like that. I feel like the trust that I have in my wife that, you know, that I implicitly trust her. She may not always make the right decision, but I trust her, you know, like 100%, you know, with my kids, which, you know, honestly, in my first marriage, I had concerns about my first wife, you know, like if we had kids, I was like, I don't know if I would really trust her. I felt scared sometimes, you know, if it ever got to that point. And, not with Julie, like I trust her implicitly, but I feel like the day that I ever would not trust her, I feel like that is like one of the worst days ever for me, because that trust is something that is, you know, it's like probably like any one of your family, like your mother, your dad, or your brothers or whatever, you trust them. Like if something happened to that trust, if it was broken, you know, I feel like I would be lost in a lot of ways.
It's foundational. It's one of our foundations. And for me, when Rachel and I split, it was a foundation for me. And it took me months to rebuild. You got to rebuild that foundation. And it comes with friendships, parents, you know, especially with your significant other, that, you know, obviously a lot of us start with really good feels. And I love my kid's mom. She's fierce. She's strong. She's a lot like my mom in those ways. I never doubt the security and safety in the best interests of my children with her. You know, our relationship just didn't work out together. But what I'm looking for is someone that makes me a better me, who challenges my areas of weakness, who is pure with their intentions for my best interests. And that's what I want to give to somebody. And ultimately, if you are going to put your relationship first when you already have children, I want to be with someone who I can do that, but who will never make me choose them over my children because of their
moral. Amen to that.
And that's, if I narrow it down, what came to my head, that's what I'm looking for. And I'm scared. I'm scared to invest time in a relationship where that's not where it ends up. My relationships, two of them, one 7 years, another 9 or 10, they didn't work. Now I'm a different and better partner than I was then. But ultimately, it's scary to get in new relationships, especially when you don't go all in because you have to. And it's hard to go all in when you're not ready to let your children be first.
Well, let me give you some dad advice. Cause I'm older, go to church, find you a woman that loves Jesus more than you. And there you go.
Yeah. It's great advice. It's great advice. I haven't yet started going to the church here in Georgia. I've had a mentor give me the same advice. So I know it's sound. You're right. And, you know, I just want to get settled. You know, I think if you just got out of a relationship, that you really need to learn to be okay with who you are and not fulfill it with fun. Because it's sure. Fun. I can go out and dance. I can go hang out with people. Yep. I watch friends do this. I watch them have relationship on relationship. And I watch them cling to unhealthy relationships for years. When you are down, you will accept what is unacceptable. You have to take the time to rebound yourself, to find your center, and then accept. You know, I know that my life would be easier if I had a woman in it in so many ways, especially solo parenting. Yep. However, I don't want to be in a relationship where I see value in helping me with my daily tasks, helping with my daily duties. I have to figure all that out. And you know what? When I find the person comes into my life, who I end up marrying, then she can be a part of that because we're a team.
Well, God's got a plan for it. And if I can quote Thomas Aquinas, I believe what he said was, "Lord, make me pure, but not yet."
Not yet. Yeah. My quote I wrote down that I'll share as we kind of wrap up. And I think you and I can have regular talks all the time, but it's a God quote, First Corinthians 9:22. I have it written here, I don't have it memorized. I am made all things to all men that I might be all means, by all means save some. I am made all things to all men that I might by all means save some.
I love what you're doing here, Thomas, because if you save one, if you help one person, if one person listens and they take a nugget out of this conversation that improves their life, or someday they find Jesus to be saved. But most importantly to me is the influence we have on each other is much greater than we realize. And all we can hope for with our children is that they get the greatest and the best impact that we can make on anyone's lives, and it's directed towards them. And it's hard, it takes a lot of effort. But these podcasts, this transparency, this sharing, this is how you can try and help other people. So keep it up.
Yeah. If I can help just one person, it's worth it to me. And maybe that one person will go out and do something that's meaningful to one other person. So it's like creating a light that keeps on going. But I really appreciate your time today, Tyler. Do you have any parting words for our viewers, like any kind of advice that on a previous podcast I did with Travis Hare, which, you know, I'm pretty sure you know Travis. He dropped a really great nugget of wisdom from his dad. And I think it's great. And it's so funny in some ways. It's like, women will make you dumb. You know, and you can read into that so many different ways. But I wondered if you had some witty, entertaining piece of wisdom from either one of your parents, or maybe both, that you'd like to share that might get stuck in our minds for the next several years.
I mean, there's just so many. I don't really ever hold on to. I try and absorb and let it go into my subconscious in my approach. And I look for words of wisdom all the time. And I just pause for a moment. Like, you try and remember someone's name. When I hear something, I just kind of pause and repeat it in my head and want to hold on to it, but not to memorize it, but to add it to the bank of data that my brain uses when making decisions or processing thoughts. And I have a buddy who texts me a quote a day all the time. And so it's a great place. I go back and I look when I need a quote. I'm like, oh, he sent me something. You know, I went on a shopping spree the other day to buy suits for the movie that I'm in. And he texts me the exact day. He said, "The diligent earner can be a guilt-free spender." And I said, "Man, you nailed it again today. I'm here spending a bunch of thousands of dollars." And, you know, so ultimately you triggered it. What has my mom or dad told me? Enjoy it while you have it, because it does not guarantee you will continue to do so. And my dad has told me that many a times when he says, "I see you, son. See, things are going great. Just remember, it doesn't always go easy." And sure enough, he's just constantly trying to remind me, problems come, big problems, fundamental changes. And whether they're relationship or work or financial or children, ultimately, the advice that rings true to me all the time is enjoy it. Enjoy the good days and work through the tough ones.
Yeah. People talk about temporal matters, and that's exactly what it is. It's temporal. It's temporary. We're caretakers for a certain amount of time. Like that house that you're living in, is it going to be in your family for generations? Who knows? It might not even be in your hands for very much longer.
Not in Georgia. I'm telling you right now, I think squatting here forever. I'm going back to work today.
But yeah, I mean, there's certain things that yeah, you know, they're more important, but yeah, do enjoy the things that you have while you have them. I mean, it's a wonderful, some wonderful knowledge. I was talking to just today in church about, my kids. I'm like, they're only going to be this age once. I'll never be able to enjoy them this way again. At some point, like, who knows if my son's going to be, you know, sourpuss in the future or just like gung ho and like, he'll never be cute and like, daddy, I love you and give me hugs or whatever. Who knows if that's going to happen again. So yeah, take advantage of it today.
Apply it to everything. Your kids, your life. Life is, you have seasons of life, and damn, is it sad to think about the ones that have come to an end. I miss a lot of great times that I had in my life that I'm just not the same man now than I was then. I wouldn't even enjoy it the same today as I did then. I loved video games. I mean, I played for 36 hours straight on those RPGs, EverQuest, World of Warcraft. I would love to play them again. And I've turned it on as an adult. I don't get the same feeling from it. But the memories,
yeah,
are strong. The memories, I miss those moments. But we don't get them again. So don't get caught up with the past. Smile about it. Know that right now in this present, you're creating what you may miss in the future. So make sure you miss it. Otherwise, you're not living a good life in the moment because you're thinking about the past too much.
God, you're right. So right. So right. Well, before we wrap up, Tyler, is there anything you want to tell people about what's going on? It sounds like you're going to be in a movie. I think you've got like a TV show. I mean, just give us a quick recap of what's going on.
Get comfortable with the uncomfortable. I've applied for anything that made me nervous. I wanted to show my team and myself. So I did a reality TV show twice now as a judge called The Blocks. You can download the app, watch season 9 and season 11 or 13. I think I was on 13 the second time around. And then I'm going to go shoot a movie next week for 2 weeks. It's called Blood Money. It'll come out someday. And I haven't yet read the script. So if you see me act in it and you think I did a good job, know that I did that with, like, I'm hoping to read it tomorrow, which is what gives me 6 days to, I have had it explained to me by my best friend who read it, some pretty big shockers. And needless to say, he told me, Tyler, you're going to have to really act in this movie. This is not you as a person. So I am looking forward to testing that. I auditioned and they thought I did a good job, knowing I was a complete rookie with no experience, never even done an audition before. But I said, hey, I'm going to try something new.
Well, can't wait to see it, man. This is going to be awesome.
Yes. Well, I hope it's good. Otherwise, well, don't want.
Well, either way, I'm sure it'll be entertaining. Tyler, yeah, Thanks so much for being on our show. We'd love to have you back on again. So for You're Not My Father, I'm Thomas Greenman, and you've just met the real Tyler Young, soon to be in movie theaters near you. We'll see you on the next episode.
See ya.